And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our program, the notorious Mexican drug lord Joaquin Guzman Loera, known as El Chapo, was convicted in a Brooklyn courtroom this week on 10 counts related to drug trafficking with the Sinaloa drug cartel. One of the attorneys who represented him in that very high-profile trial is a lawyer from Baltimore. William Purpura will join me here in Studio A Monday on Midday with his unique perspective on that very high-profile trial. Tonight is the opening night of Henry IV, Part 1, at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company here in Baltimore. The play is the first of Shakespeare's seven Henrys, as they're known by aficionados of the Bard, and it's considered Shakespeare's most ambitious history play. I'm joined now by two actors who are performing leading roles in this production. Seamus Miller plays Prince Hal, and Gregory Burgess plays Prince Hal's mentor, the incorrigible Sir John Falstaff. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you. Hey.
Incorrigible indeed. Mm-hmm. So Seamus Miller, as a scholar of Shakespeare, I mean, you're both scholars of Shakespeare, but the Henrys, as they're known, and history plays. Give us a little brief capsule about what that refers to.
Well, these are plays about the history of English royalty in the centuries leading up to Shakespeare's life. And there's a small but vocal minority of people who think that Henry IV, Part One is Shakespeare's greatest play. And I think the reasoning behind that is that it's one of the first great cross-genre works of dramatic literature, and that it's simultaneously a hard-drinking buddy comedy and a war epic and a father-son coming-of-age story and an upstairs-downstairs drama. And I sometimes tell people that it's like if you mashed up The Crown with Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Platoon and somehow still got a coherent and compelling story out of the whole thing.
That is one cross, let me tell you. And Greg Burgess, the when it comes to history plays, are these like, you know, dramatic reenactions that, you know, you'd see on a Netflix special or something? I mean, are they in fact true to the historical record, or does Shakespeare, like so many of these author types, take some liberties?
Well, you know, as far as I've read, I think they're pretty much true to history. I mean, of course, it's Shakespeare, so there's going to be a flair for, obviously, the dramatic. Yeah, I would say it's pretty close. I mean, Seamus would know probably a bit more than I do.
Seamus mentioned the buddy comedy aspect of it.
Yes,
so you play this sort of mentor to Prince Hal, who is Henry, who is scheduled to be ascending to the throne at some point.
Yes.
But you are the sort of the bad influence. Huh?
Yes, definitely, most definitely, incredibly interesting, incredibly complex person. Yeah, it's.
Have you played this role before?
I have played this role before,
mm-hmm.
But in a different manner. I did The Merry Wives of Windsor, which was pretty much Shakespeare's idea of Falstaff in love. So that's a lot more slapstick than anything else.
Right.
And this one, it can be serious at times because of the air of war and everything else. But basically, it's still the same person being, you know, gregarious. Yeah.
So you know the character, but the part is different.
Yes. It's just a different version of that character.
Yeah. And Seamus Miller, the sheer tenacity and, you know, strength it's going to take for you to do both of these productions. I mean, we talked about Henry IV, Part One opens tonight. There is a Part Two, and you're going to be playing that as well in a few weeks. Have you rehearsed? So first of all, how does one memorize all of those words? Because there are three Saturday afternoons in March, Saturdays in March, where you're going to do both Part One and Part Two on the same day.
Well, it takes a lot of outside work to learn the lines for two productions at the same time. But once you get up on your feet and are rehearsing both shows simultaneously, the words get into your body, the physicality gets attached to the language, and somehow, magically, it all stays in your brain.
So is that how it is magic to me, let me tell you. But is that how, in fact, you've been rehearsing it? It's not like you've just been concentrating on Part One, you're going to open that tonight, and then, you know, next week you start on Part Two. Have you been doing both of them at the same time?
We've been rehearsing both shows, but for the past week, we've been teching and focusing on part one. And it's actually a little bit easier, I think, to do two shows in rep that are designed to go together, because sometimes you'll perform two shows simultaneously that have nothing to do with each other, and you're playing different characters in both shows. So at least for these shows, there's a through line, and hopefully, you know, a delight for the audience in watching both parts in a single day.
Mm-hmm. And Greg Burgess, in terms of a schedule for the actors and the production crew, if you're doing just one show, you know, you rehearse it, you do previews, it opens, and then at that point, you basically show up to the theater for the time, you know, of the show. You're not there during the day. But at mm-hmm. this point, are you going to have to be rehearsing during the day part two while you're performing part one for these first couple of weeks?
How does that work? Yeah, we open up part two in just a few weeks. So we are going to be heavy into doing the tech for that and having to do rehearsal for that and get much deeper into it. So, yeah, oh, yeah.
What's your advice, Seamus, for listeners, for people in the audience who are going to be the brave ones who show up for both the afternoon and the evening performances once these things get into rep and you're doing two of them on the same day? You know how to handle this as an actor, but how do you think an audience person should approach that particular endeavor?
Well, I think if you're not particularly up on your 15th century English politics, we do have information in the program that will help you sort of figure out who people are and the lineage and succession of this.
I can barely keep up with the 21st century politics. Yeah, 15th century, I am deaf not involved.
I'm better with the 15th century. I think... just understanding that Henry IV is not was not born to be king of England, and I was not born to be the heir to the throne. He's taken the crown away from Richard II, and there's a lot of controversy about how that happened. And that's really the backstory for the show. And we've done some things technically in the production to help the audience understand something that Shakespeare's audience would have just known inherently because it was part of their history.
Mm-hmm. And Greg Burgess, what does Shakespeare know about things like buddies, like friends, Falstaff and Hal? What does Shakespeare know about the father-son dynamic? What does Shakespeare know about, you know, the geopolitical sense of the world at his time? In other words, how does he inform our understanding of father-son relationships and buddy relationships, etc.?
You know, ever since I started doing Shakespeare, the one thing that I have noticed about him is the understanding of human nature. And it's interesting that no matter how many times through the years, human nature is what it is. We go through a gamut of every single emotion, whether it's jealousy, whether it's ambition. Ambition can go too far. Love can conquer all. And I think that the interesting thing, and to me what makes him so great, is just that insight of knowing how human beings work.
And Seamus Miller, is it important, do you think, as an actor, as a performer, that the audience find some resonance with the material, with the play, to the current moment? I mean, you're not doing this play 2 years ago. You're not doing this play 2 years from now. You're doing it now with everything going on in the geopolitical realm in America, in Baltimore, et cetera. How important is resonance with current stuff to you as an artist, and do you think it should be important to listeners?
Absolutely. I think that Shakespeare's history plays are some of the most relevant and beautiful pieces in the canon, and they don't get performed as much as his other works, but this play in particular is about what qualities are necessary for leadership. And who is fit to be a leader, and questions of, you know, how do you rule, and is an understanding of common people important, or is nobility and proper conduct important? And I think it's impossible to watch this play and not think about what's going on in our world right now. So I would have said that Henry IV was relevant 2 years ago, and I'll tell you it's more relevant right now.
And Greg Burgess, I mean, to say the least, for both of you, this ain't your first rodeo when it comes to Shakespeare. You've done a lot of Shakespeare. When you get into the weeds of this language, what's your advice for folks listening to this language who don't hang out with Shakespeare, who don't read it, who don't go to lots and lots of Shakespeare? Because the language is obviously a very different rhetorical tone than the language we're used to hearing in everyday discourse.
Well, you know, it's in doing this for as long as I've been doing, I think when we have audiences to come in, a lot of times the action and the language for the average person kind of goes together. When they see the action, they pretty much understand how. Yeah.
So it's a whole lot easier when you're seeing the play rather than you're like reading the play.
In a way it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, break a leg, gentlemen. You've got a long haul ahead of you, and it's going to be really exciting. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Seamus Miller and Greg Burgess are members of the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's resident acting company. They play the roles of Prince Hal and Falstaff, respectively, in Henry IV. Part one opens tonight. Part two begins next month. And there are three Saturdays in March that you'll be able to catch both plays on the same day. If you're game, we've got more information on our website, WYPR.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday, a conversation with one of the lawyers on the defense team of El Chapo. He was convicted this week in federal court on 10 counts of drug trafficking. William Purpura helped to defend him. We'll talk to him about that experience Monday on Midday. We want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for lunch. Bottoms Up Bagels is a small batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by traditions of bagel making dating back to the 1940s. Bottoms Up Bagels offers customized catering packages of all kinds. You can find them at the Waverly Farmers Market and online at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, and Kathleen Cahill produce our program. Jamila Kremple is our digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Morgan Ome and Abba Amoa are our interns. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Reveal is up next at the top of the hour at the news from NPR. Have a great weekend.